The last speaker before the panel is Dr. Harlan Cohen, who's going to speak on public participation in Antarctica and the role of NGOs. This public participation, I think, has been pointed out by Dr. Susan Solomon in the morning. So Dr. Cohen is advisor on ocean governance and international institution of the IUCN. Harlan, you have the floor.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I see I have 12 minutes. I also have two speeches. I had rewritten it based on comments that were made earlier. I do want to thank the organizers for the opportunity to speak and to the Smithsonian for making the venue available. I note that I'm stepping in for my deporter, who regrets that she could not be here today. The title that I was given was Public Participation in Antarctica, the Role of Non-Governmental Organizations, and I have somewhat broadened that to the role of non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations. I've done this for two reasons. One is, of course, Article 3 of the treaty refers to encouraging cooperative working relations with the United Nations specialized agencies and other international organizations having a scientific or technical interest in Antarctica. Thus, it refers to international organizations and includes both non-governmental and intergovernmental, and that has been the way the cooperation has developed. The other reason I do it is, of course, IUCN is both has an intergovernmental and non-governmental component. We have heard that the treaty developed from closed meetings in the 50s, that it developed as a disarmament agreement. It developed really as a closed agreement. But even from the beginning, it was recognized that there was a need for advice from non-governmental organizations, and specifically at first from SCAR. And the role of SCAR and international organizations was recognized at the first meeting of the parties. Of course, at the third meeting, the agreed measures on the conservation of Antarctic fauna and flora were adopted largely on the basis of advice from SCAR, as we've heard. The Antarctic Treaty System remained limited, but was quickly opened to participants from outside. For example, in 1972, at the meeting at which the Convention on the Conservation of Antarctic Seals was adopted, the FAO was represented as an observer. Following on that, and with the interest in the fishing for krill, SCAR's advice was sought and was given. In 1977, FAO provided three reports to the Antarctic Treaty System on the role of krill in the ecosystem. Also in the 1970s, there was a change in the way multilateral institutions worked and how advice was given. In this country, NEPA opened a system of environmental assessment in which the public was invited to give its advice. The UN Conference on the Human Environment in Stockholm in 1972 was open to non-governmental organizations. By 1977, the ATCM, the ninth ATCM, two national delegations included advisors from non-governmental backgrounds. One was a conservation organization, one was an industry organization. Also within IUCN, our members were pushing in the 1970s for participation in the Antarctic Treaty System. The Antarctic and Southern Ocean Coalition, ASOC, was established in 1978, also to this end. In 1981, the IUCN Council called for the preparation of a conservation strategy for Antarctica and the Southern Ocean. The conference at which CAMELAR was adopted included observers from both international non-governmental organizations and intergovernmental organizations. Slowly, the rules of procedure were changed to provide for participation by non-consultative parties and by observers and experts. This happened in the 1980s and in part was prompted by the minerals negotiations. In part, no doubt, also was prompted by discussions at the third conference on oceans and law of the sea under the United Nations and the conclusion and adoption in 1982 of the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which included language referring to common heritage of, in those days, mankind, we would say humankind today. IUCN interest in and participation in Antarctic Treaty meetings continued through the 80s and 90s, continues today. In the interest of time, I'm going to jump right ahead to note that in 1991, IUCN published, with cooperation with SCAR, a strategy for an Antarctic conservation and is looking now at updating that again together with SCAR and other IUCN partners and parties. I'll turn quickly now to the role that non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations have today in the system and how that could be broadened and strengthened, and the benefits that non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations bring to the system and the strengths that we bring. For example, ASOC has at every ATCM and at CAMELAR meetings puts forward information papers which are very useful. 9 were put forward at the most recent ATCM in Baltimore on a range of topics, marine protection, tourism, climate, a range of topics also of CAMELAR. Oceanides, which is a non-governmental scientific organization, has provided great information on site management, site visits. IATO, the International Antarctica Tourism, I've forgotten the acronym, I had it in my longer speech. IATO, the tourism group, also brings information to ATCMs on numbers of tourists, places tourists have gone, and also takes back to its members information on what has happened at the ATCM, what new advisory and recommendations are on the way, and what its members should do. Information from NGOs and from IGOs, non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations, to the ATCM is very important to the ATCM, as I've said, and also it's very important to the public. The non-governmental organizations bring to the public information on what is happening, bring to the ATCM information of concern to a broader public. This interest builds constituencies in countries for Antarctica, for Antarctic research, for Antarctic conservation. I'm going to turn now to looking forward to the future. One issue I had wanted to address was the public availability of information. The Antarctic Treaty consultative meeting documents were restricted into the 80s. It was only in the 80s that countries were invited to identify those information papers that they would wish to make public. The current practice is that documents are password protected until after the meeting, and I will suggest here that this is hinders public participation in the system and would urge that parties look to withdraw this password protection. The reality is that the documents are largely available. Why not make them fully publicly available? I also want to note that although the current practice is that non-consultative parties participate fully in consultative meetings, with the exception that they may not block consensus, the rules of procedure still do not reflect that non-consultative parties are, as a matter of course, invited to consultative meetings. I would suggest that these rules be changed. I would also suggest that the rules of procedure be changed so that they reflect the current reality that observers and experts are welcome at all sessions of consultative meetings. Also, to promote public participation, I'd suggest looking to ways to make more welcoming the advice of non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations, and to make more open the meetings. And I will throw out one suggestion that will be, I know, controversial, but something to be considered. Why not consider webcasting meetings? I realize that there is a disadvantage to that, but it would certainly make the meetings more publicly available. It would bring school children in who wanted to watch. It would be educational. The disadvantage, I realize, that if the particularly sensitive discussions were taking place, they would probably then be adjourned to a Friends of the Chair smaller meeting. Nevertheless, it would further open up the system. In closing, I do want to note that from the beginning, as I had said, there was public participation in that the parties realized they needed the advice, they needed the information from SCAR, and I think they have come to realize that they also need information from non-governmental and intergovernmental organizations. This has been, of course, welcome from the beginning with respect of WMO, IMO, but also now, I think, also with respect of ASOC, IATO, and others. Thank you very much. Oh, sorry.
Do you have your, sorry? Thank you, Harlan. Here's your medal. Oh, for an excellent lecture.
Thank you.